Solitaire Rose Novelcast, Do the Job, Part 1. Music means a new novel. That's right, this is the third novel in the Solitaire Rose Novelcast. Looks like I'm going to get about 2 to 3 a year done. So at the rate I'm going, I've got 5 years worth of novels written. Unless I speed it up a little bit. Yeah, things have been a little slow as I get everything ready, but we're back. Every other week, we will have a new novelcast. That'll be Novelcast this week, Solitaire Rose Radio the next week, and so on and so on and so on. Remember that every Monday is Crazy Comics and Stories, and sometime during the week is the weekly news update. All of them have their own websites. Go ahead, please check them out. For those of you who have never listened to Novelcast before, hi, my name is Corey Strode. I am a podcaster, a writer, and pretty much a head goofball here at Solitaire Rose Networks. What I have done is taken the novels I've written, edited them, and we'll be turning them into podcasts, and eventually we'll be turning them into ebooks that'll be available on Amazon. I'm running a little behind on that because it's a little tougher than I thought it was. Also, let's face it, I'm doing 4 podcasts with a 5th one coming up soon, so time is not exactly plentiful. All you need to know is how I tell you what has come before. All you need to know is nothing. You can come into this novel right away. This is the first part. And this noise is how I show a change of scene. In a novel, this is usually shown by having a bigger gap between the paragraphs or some marks between the paragraphs. There's no way to really do that in audio, so I have used that noise in order to do that. And now, without further delay, Do the Job, Part 1. Chapter 1. I hate to burst your bubble, but I tend to leave a life that does that a lot. I'm a private eye, but I don't have a shabby office, a bottle in the bottom drawer, or Venetian blinds. Hell, my office doesn't even have a window. I don't own a trench coat. I haven't had a mysterious woman come to be rescued. I've never fallen in love with a client or slept with one. I have carried my gun twice, and the rest of the time it was in a safe next to my desk. I have a nice office in a strip mall. We get it cheap. And most of the work we do is around credit checks, background checks, and other boring investigations like that. My partner in the business, and wife outside of it, Katie Green, handles that end of the business, and we make a lot of money at it. We even employ a couple people who work on her side of the office who do nothing but research as their job. Katie and I agree that as we move into the 90s, this part of the business is just going to get bigger. We've done a good job of securing contracts with most of the major companies in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Katie was not the kind of woman you'd see going into most offices. She'd been in the wrestling ring for a while, but doesn't look like most female wrestlers. She was about 1/2 foot shorter than me, had a huge mane of curly red hair that cascaded to about halfway down her back. Her blue eyes were striking in just how light they were, especially since she usually kept them surrounded by a large amount of eyeliner, making them pop when you looked at her. She also had an impressive figure and filled out the punky short dresses she wore. Impressive in that she looked as if she could beat the crap out of you without raising a sweat. Most of the men who came in couldn't stop staring at her. The ones who weren't there because they were at the end of their ropes would spend at least some time clumsily hitting on her, which she loved. The ones who were at the end of their ropes would quickly forget her once I brought them into my office to find out how their lives had fallen apart. Me, I'm the face of the business, which is something I'm used to. You might remember me as the Lightning Kid. A baby-face wrestler, that's a good guy, who fought the biggest heels, those are the bad guys, in the wrestling ring all around the upper Midwest. Now most people know me as Lance Green, but the workers I knew in the business still call me Lightning or Champ. Of course, I don't move like Lightning anymore. You take the bumps I did in the ring for 15 years and you move a lot slower than you did at 20. I get the cases that are more traditional. Protection, finding out if a spouse is cheating and who with, is someone running a work on a disability claim. I also get trotted out for meetings with the big companies we want to work with. Oh, yeah, and I still talk in wrestling lingo. A work is when you're lying to people, and it comes from working the crowd. I spent 15 years in a wrestling ring trying to get people to care about the angles, those are the stories, and to care about me getting beat up by whoever the next big heel was going to be. I know how to get people to buy into things, and the fact that I was on TV for 15 years helps get a foot in the door. I'd been completely out of the business for about 5 years, but I kept in touch with the workers. You never get it completely out of your blood, and when I hit the gym, it's still the same gym we used to pump iron at in order to look like monsters. Why do I bring all of this up? Simple. Part of my past came into the office. Billy the Bruiser Bates. And that's where this story starts. He was running a small independent wrestling federation in the area and put on a few shows a month, mostly in VFW halls and high school gyms, but he drew a decent enough crowd for him and the workers to get a payday. He'd been on the way down when I was on the way up, and now he couldn't take a bump without walking with a cane for a week, so he moved from the ring to the office. He looked a lot older than his 55 years, and if you didn't know better, you'd thought he'd been a boxer. He was still a big, barrel-chested man, but his forehead was a massive scar tissue from all the times he'd run a blade across it to make it seem like he'd been split open by another wrestler. His features were puffy, partly from age and partly from all the blows he'd taken. He had cold blue eyes and still shaved his head. He'd been shaving his head so long he had no idea if he even had any hair left. He'd showed up around lunchtime, even though I'd planned to run to the Chinese buffet at the other end of the strip mall with Katie. He asked if he could talk to me in a professional capacity. Katie and the other two girls took off, and I showed him the office, such as it was. The storefront we had been a deli, 24-hour photo business, and a used bookstore before we rented it, so the office I had been created by dropping 3 sheets of sheetrock in a corner and adding a door. I had some of my old wrestling memorabilia around, a championship belt on a file cabinet, pictures on the wall, a couple of framed issues of Pro Wrestling Illustrated where I'd been put on the cover. The rest looked pretty damn boring with file cabinets, an old wooden desk I got from Goodwill, a typewriter, and a computer I was spending my free time trying to figure out. I had a couple of nice chairs across from my desk, while mine was just an old office chair I'd gotten at the same time as the desk. Katie kept saying I should upgrade, but I didn't see much need for it. The chair and the desk did their job, and I don't like throwing things out that could still do the job. Billy sat across from me and fidgeted a bit until I sat down, grabbed a pen and a legal pad from the top drawer, and said, "All right, what's this all about?" Billy was from the South, as were a lot of wrestlers of his time, and he tended to talk slow and quiet. He looked around as if thinking someone was about to burst in and stop him. Once he felt comfortable, he said, "I don't know who else to come to with this. You and me, we always work together good." I nodded, letting him know to go on. "You heard that Mikey OD'd a couple of weeks ago, right?" he asked. I nodded. Mikey's real name was Michael Bashmet, whose parents got out of Russia around the end of the Second World War. He went by Mikey Blast and did everything he could to avoid the Russian gimmick because he was a terrible heel. He couldn't get the crowd to hate him no matter how hard he tried. But he was a genius in the ring. He could have a good match with anyone, no matter how terrible they were. He also had a problem with heroin back when I was in the business, and about a year after I retired, he got off the drugs, but it was too late. He'd lost his speed and some of his coordination. No one would hire him. He and his traveling buddy, Eddie Toombs, swear to God that's his name, a perfect wrestling name if there ever was one. They opened a wrestling school. They had become the main trainers for the guys in the upper Midwest, and if I told you who they trained, you'd recognize them, even if you didn't watch wrestling. I'd heard he died, then saw in the paper they found him full of heroin, so I figured he'd gotten back on the horse. I went to the funeral, but didn't know what to say to anyone. Thankfully, no one else seemed to know what to say either, so we all just sat there in stony Minnesota silence. I didn't go back to the widow's house for cake and coffee. I felt too far removed from that world. I'd seen Billy at the funeral, but he was so agitated, I didn't think he'd remember much of anything. I nodded again, and he went on. I couldn't believe it. I'd been there for him when he kicked the shit. He talked all the time about how he'd turned his life around. I brought him in to talk to the workers in the locker room once in a while to tell them how they needed to be careful, how they shouldn't get hooked on drugs, how he went from painkillers to heroin and was upfront about it all. I didn't think he'd fall off the wagon. "You never know the pain of a brother," I said. "True, true," he said. But the more I thought about it, the more it didn't make sense. He showed up for a card over in Eau Claire a couple of weeks before he passed and gave the talk to a couple of the new guys. And he pulled me aside to let me know he had a few guys he felt were good enough to work my undercards. Then he told me that Brad Goldman was looking at bringing him on as a road agent, and he'd like it if I could put in a good word. Brad Goldman was a name that had come out of nowhere in the past few years. He was a TV producer type who'd figured out how to make big money with wrestling. He'd hired up a bunch of stars from local promotions, made his TV show look like it was a big deal, and was going national. Most wrestling shows were filmed in TV studios or small halls so they could set up the cameras just right and not worry about the fans getting in the way of things, but not Goldman. He put on shows in basketball arenas and made it look like a network TV show. A lot of the smaller promoters hated him, said he was killing the business, but he gave workers big paydays, and I'm for anyone who pays the workers big money. I told him I would, since I was bringing a few of my workers to his big show later that month to see if Goldman would pick him up. Mikey looked like he was on top of the world. The more I think about it, the more I know that something's not right. I think it's a work. A work. It's an insider term for something that's a storyline. Fake. When a guy in the ring takes a steel folding chair to the leg and they tell people his leg's been broken, it's always a work, setting up things for a future match. Someone's leg really gets broken in the ring, they would cover up by ending the match quick and taking the guy out with the house lights down. "Billy," I said, "you've been in the business too long. You think everything's a work. You still think Kennedy's death was a work." "Bullshit," he said, louder than anything he'd said all day. "Just because I think everything's a work doesn't mean this ain't one. Mikey didn't OD. I don't believe it, neither does the widow. She and I decided to bring this to you because you can get to the bottom of it." "You want me to dig into his death?" "Yep," he said. "You can't afford the cost of this. And no, I'm not saying you're poor. I'm saying that something like this would run a lot of billable hours, and I'm not cheap. I have to answer to the owner," I said. "I thought you were the owner. Says so right on the door." "Nope," I said. "I got a money mark. He put up the money for the place, handles all the accounting, payroll, rent, and the other things. That way Katie and I can just do our jobs." "Figured you'd find a mark. You were always good at that sort of thing." A mark was someone who bought into the fiction that we created in the ring, someone who thought it was all real. A money mark was a guy who wanted to own a wrestling company. Hodge wasn't a mark. He couldn't give less of a shit about wrestling, but I figured it was the easiest way to get Billy to understand my point. He'd been in the wrestling business since he got out of high school, and I didn't think it was worth the time to explain venture capital to him. Billy was silent for a minute, then looked like he was working up the courage to keep talking. I let him. I owed him that. In the ring, on the road, in the life, we were brothers, putting our bodies in each other's hands and doing everything we could to make sure the other guy didn't get hurt in the ring. He finally said, "The widow doesn't have much, but she's got a life insurance policy. She's willing to pay you half that, and I'm putting together some memorial shows. We could raise enough money for you to at least look into it." I thought about it a minute. "Let me walk it around for a couple of days, Billy," I said. "I can't ask for more than that," he said, in the quiet, slow way of his. "I've been meaning to get out to the Cottage Grove shows," I said. I'd always tried to drop in on his shows in the southern suburbs, since they were just a couple of miles from my place. But in the last few months, I'd stopped going. I don't know, maybe I was finally bored with the business. Maybe I kept myself too busy so I could feel like I wasn't part of that world anymore. We had a good one last month, when the referees did a bit where he kept drinking shots bought for him from the crowd and was too drunk to see when the heel would cheat. It was great, and the crowd loved it," he said, smile on his face for the first time I'd seen. We talked for the rest of my lunchtime about ideas he had for cards in the next few months. He was really sold on Jamie Rios, a Puerto Rican who could pass himself off as Mexican. "Guy could move," Billy said, and the ladies loved him. "He puts asses in seats," Billy said, the highest compliment you could give a wrestler. When Katie came back, he looked a little bit embarrassed and left, thanking me again. I stood outside my office door and watched him as he left. Katie walked back, carrying a sandwich after she'd given the two girls their tasks for the rest of the afternoon. "What did Billy want?" she asked. "He brought in a case." "You going to take it?" "I'm thinking about it." She knew me well enough to know I wasn't just trying to think of a way to say no. "He doesn't like me much, does he?" He gets nervous around you, I said, going back to my office. He gets nervous around anyone not in the business. I was in the business, she said defensively, following me, flopping down on the same chair Billy had been sitting in. And I wasn't half bad. Yeah, but you weren't part of the business, he knows. He thinks women should walk to the ring, cheer for their man, and look pretty, not get in the ring, and certainly not work matches. She got a sour look on her face and said, what other cases are you working? I got a divorce where the husband thinks the wife is exposing the kid to drugs, and another where the wife thinks the husband is cheating. Standard depressing stuff. It was the worst thing about the job. People would come to you with their worst fears, and you got paid to confirm them. I wish I could say that I'd gotten hardened to it over 5 years, but I hadn't. There's still no way not to feel like the lowest form of life when you slide pictures over of a cheating husband, or worse, then take a check from someone. Remember, we've got that presentation at IFC next week, she said, seeing that I was moving into a brooding mood. You get to do the dog and pony show for a bunch of suits. That's why we pay you the big bucks. Yeah, when do I start to get those? She smiled and said, trust me, we're doing a hell of a lot better than a lot of people. That guy at the deli who sold me that sandwich was a stockbroker until about 8 months ago. He said when the market tanked, he went from making a couple $100,000. Now he works for minimum wage. I shrugged and said, that's what happens when you make a living gambling. Eventually the house wins. He's a stockbroker, not a gambler, she said. And there's a difference, I said. That night I was in my basement lifting weights. The good thing about my run in pro wrestling was that I made enough money that I could afford to buy a big farmhouse west of the Twin Cities. I'd actually bought the entire farm, but sold off the farm acreage and used that to help pay off the house, so we owned it free and clear. It was a huge thing, and the basement was big enough that I had a nice home gym with a full set of free weights, as good as any gym in the area. I also had a treadmill and a stationary bike, as well as a big TV and a stereo system. Even though I wasn't in the ring anymore, and my neck was so messed up that I wouldn't be able to take any bumps in the future, I liked staying in shape. Part of it was for the job. If you're going to be checking up on cheating husbands, watching houses for drug deals, and otherwise nosing into other people's business, you need to be able to take care of yourself in a fight. The other reason was that when I lifted, I was able to clear my head. Katie called it my meditation time, but I just thought of it as a good way to get rid of all the shit I dealt with all day long. I was working on upper body that night, and I'd already done bench presses as well as incline and decline presses when Katie came down to talk to me. She was wearing a ripped-up t-shirt for a band I hadn't heard of and shorts that showed off her fine-toned legs. Most of the time she'd join me for a workout, but I was in a mood when I got home, deep in thought over what Billy had dropped on me. I wasn't close to Mikey, but I'd worked with them, both clean and messed up. I'd been one of the people who'd confronted him about his drug use. It was partly about him, but it was also that you couldn't be in the ring with a guy who was messed up. You expected the other guy in the ring to make sure you didn't get hurt. If you were diving out of the ring onto him, he had to know to be in position to catch you. He had to know just how to be there in time for a clothesline, and not to stiff-arm you when he did a move. Mikey hadn't been a good ring partner anymore. Billy was the one who was helping him through it. Billy put him up in his house, made sure he didn't get any junk, and then helped him put his life back together. Billy had even introduced him to the woman who became his wife. I'd been going over those months in my mind as I did my fly lifts, bringing the dumbbells together in the air and then back down to my side. I also kept thinking about the people I'd known in the business who hadn't gotten clean, guys who couldn't get booked for shows anymore because everyone knew the money would just go up their nose or in their veins. Katie sat down on one of the benches I had and used the remote to turn off the music I used to keep mentally pumped while lifting. She had that look on her face, and I knew I was in for a lecture, but it would take her a while to get to it. You going to lift all night, or are we going to eat something? It's upper body day, I said, taking a break between sets. You know that takes me a lot of time. I still have my tricep work to do after this. Yeah, and I also know you go right to the gym when you're going to be a moody bastard, and I can only put up with about 2 hours of that. She was smiling, but I knew that smile had a limited shelf life. I just can't put it together in my head. I hadn't talked to Billy in a while, but he seemed like a guy who was going to stay clean. He'd put together a decent life, what with the wife, the house, and the wrestling school. He'd even got Hodge to run the business end of it. Our Hodge, she said? Hodge Johnson was the guy who put up the money for us to start our business, and his people took care of all the business stuff for us, like payroll, rent, and the like. We made the money, and he spent it. But since we were bringing in a lot more than we spent, he was happy with us. I was happy to have someone take care of that end of it, since neither Katie or I were all that good at the business end of things. We did well, we got bigger checks and could hire more people. We didn't do well, and Hodge came by and told us how much time we had to get the business back in the black. Luckily, Hodge hadn't come by with that talk for the last 2 years. If you're willing to listen, I have some thoughts on the whole thing, she said. Always, I said. Don't get me wrong. Katie was one of the hottest women I'd ever seen, but you don't spend most of your waking hours for 6 years with someone just for being hot, unless you're as shallow as a mud puddle. Katie was a lot smarter than any woman I'd known, so I listened to her. Doesn't mean I always did what she said, but I'd learned to at least consider it. I don't want you to take the case. We both know there's no money in it. Yeah, he's offering up half the life insurance from the widow, but at your hourly rate, they'll burn through that in about 2 weeks. And that's if you don't work on it full time. They had to put together a collection to bury the guy, and I'm guessing the life insurance wasn't a great policy, or he would have told you the amount. Also, you still miss that life. Look at you. One of the workers comes to you for help, and you're right back where you were when you had to quit. You're depressed, and it's not just that Mikey's gone. I know you, and I know you miss the ring. When your neck got fucked up, you would just sit in that chair upstairs and watch TV or come down here and throw the weights around. If I hadn't put the idea in your head to get a new job, you'd still be up there or down here, except it wouldn't be with me. That ain't it, I said. It's just about how beat down Billy looked. He's given his life to the business. He gave his youth to it in the ring. Now he's giving his middle age to it training people. I want to help him. I want to help someone who's not looking to get a better deal in a divorce or find out their husband would rather sleep with someone else. She gave me the look, one eyebrow cocked and the rest of her face showing she wanted me to cut through the crap and get to the issue. I want to help him because he's one of the workers. No one else is going to dig into it. The cops think it's done, and I just don't think it is. There's more to it. What if there is, she said. You going to make it all better and bring him back to life? No, I said, putting my thoughts into words slowly. But I'm the guy who knows the business well enough that I might be able to find out what happened. Why he turned back to the junk. Why he threw it all away. I could tell she wasn't happy about it, but I also knew that I had to know. I didn't buy into Billy's conspiracy theories, but I did think there was something about the story that just didn't fit. I couldn't prove Billy was right, but maybe if I poked around and talked to people, I could piece together what had happened the last few days of his life and get some answers. You're the most stubborn man I've ever known, she said, face unreadable. Yep, I said, standing up and putting the dumbbells back in the rack. But if I wasn't, I wouldn't have been able to get you to come home with me. So I think it's a good thing. She went over to the treadmill and started it up while I grabbed a couple of smaller dumbbells to continue my workout. After she got up to speed, she said, just be careful. I got a bad feeling about this one. I'll be fine, I said. And remember, you've got other cases to work. You know, paying ones. I know. I also have to be the lightning kid for a bunch of suits next week so you can keep those little girls busy. Little girls, she laughed. I'll have you know they are very intelligent women who know more about computers and credit than you or I ever will. Good, I said. That leaves us time for the important stuff, like looking good and saving the world. She laughed, and to me, that meant all was right in the world. And there you go. Do the Job, Part 1. As you can tell now, it is a novel about detectives. It is a novel about professional wrestling. It is set in the late 80s in Minneapolis. And we will go from here. I will see you in 2 weeks. Now, with all of the podcasts here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we do have ads. Here they are. Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest-running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com. Use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you gotta shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC. Get you some blades. They're wonderful. I use them. I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors. Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and Dream Host. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. I want to thank you for listening. Because this is the first part, I think this is a really good episode for you to send to your friends, to retweet, to put out on your Facebook, all your social media. Please let people know, because I'm really excited about this novel. I'm excited about all the novels. So this is the first of three novels featuring the Lightning Kid. So this is the first one. The next novel I will be doing is the second in the After the Fall series, which is set after 5 years after a zombie apocalypse. Then after that, I haven't decided, but I'm going to be alternating my series novels so that it's not one after the other. I write a diverse bunch of novels, if you've listened to the last two podcasts. So I want to keep that up. Again, thank you for listening, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with part two of Do the Job.